This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our first episode comes from Barry Craig, confidential investigator. We'll hear the October 24th, 1951 episode titled Microfilm in the Fish Tank. After that, it's The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, and the Newton Murder Case, his story from April 2nd, 1945.
Transcription. Barry Craig, confidential investigator, starring William Gargan.
Guy Craig speaking. Detectives come in three sizes. City cops, big agencies, and guys like me with a small office and an insurance company retainer to pay the rent. Cops don't have to worry about getting cases, and the big agencies have branches from here to Shanghai. But from where I sit, you never can tell where your next case will come from. Last week, it started with my old brown suit. I'd been on a bodyguard case, and the suit looked as if I'd been sleeping in it for a week. There was a good reason for that. I had. I tucked it under one elbow and ducked into George the Tailor's. George had a king-size shoebox in the basement of my office building.
Morning, Mr. Craig.
Hi, George. What can you do with this suit?
If you like herringbone handkerchiefs, I could maybe salvage enough goods.
All right, so I'm not Adolph Manju. How about it? Tuesday?
With the spots out, Thursday.
Okay, Thursday.
Mr. Craig, I wanted to ask you. I've got a problem.
Well, what is it, George? Got a pair of plaid slacks with no coat to match?
No. I'm serious. My wife says, George, you go to the police. But she wasn't here when that man came.
What man? What's the pitch, George?
The man said I need protection.
Shakedown, huh?
The man said I've got to pay $50 a week to stay open. He says, George, you wouldn't want trouble. Maybe a bottle of acid spilled on your racks.
Did you pay him?
Well, I didn't have $50. I told him to get out. Now I'm scared, Mr. Craig. Look, you're a detective. I want to hire you. You protect me.
That won't work, George. Stopping a protection racket is a big operation. You need 24-hour guards, a whole setup to protect all the shop owners.
Well, I could pay in installments.
You've already paid for protection, George. Your taxes. You better call in the cops. They're the only ones who can swing it.
No. He said they'd beat me up. Maybe kill me.
Look, George, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll drop in at headquarters tomorrow and bend the lieutenant's ear. He'll give orders for a cop from the precinct to look after you. And start the ball rolling to find out who's behind this racket.
Will you really do that for me, Mr. Craig?
Sure. After all, I wouldn't want anything to happen to my brown suit. George disappeared in a spritz of steam, and I headed home. I put in a call to Lieutenant Edwards. He was out, so I left a message that I'd call in the morning. I was propped up in bed eating pretzels, reading a medium hard-boiled private eye opus, wondering where he found all the beautiful blondes with the low-cut problems when the phone rang. I left the intrepid sleuth under a falling blackjack and stretched for the receiver. Craig speaking.
Mr. Craig, you've got to come quick.
George?
You've got to come down right away, Mr. Craig. Please.
What's up? Somebody there? Hello, George. George! Hello, George! I slid into my shoes and took off across town. When I hit the pavement outside of George's shop, I had company. A hook and ladder, two pump engines, and a crowd of fire buffs who traveled to Denver to see a lit can of Sterno. The smoke was pouring out of the cellar as I muscled my way through the police lines and ran into Lieutenant Edwards.
What do you want to be when you grow up, Craig? A cop or a fireman?
I'll take a rain check on the laugh, Lieutenant. What are you doing here?
Just holding back the crowd. If you ask me, all these fire buffs are nuts.
Anybody know what started the fire?
Doubt it. Cleaners' stores go up like birthday candles all the time.
What does George say?
Who?
George, the tailor. He runs the shop.
Probably at home playing three-handed stuss.
No. He lives in back of the shop. He called me from here. You sure he isn't around?
Haven't seen him. Fire boys said the joint was clean.
Maybe. We better find out.
Hey, where you going?
Inside. It's chilly out here. I grabbed a rubber Chesterfield from the hook and ladder and headed inside. The first flash had died down and the shop was burning nicely at the proper temperature for browning a turkey quickly. Under the fireman's coat, I was beginning to baste in my own juice as I pushed into the back room. I found what I was looking for under the counter. George the tailor, dead. I carried him outside and knocked off a few minutes to pump the smoke out of my lungs and siphon a little oxygen in.
You all right, Barry?
You know where I can get a new pair of eyelashes?
Craig, what are you doing sightseeing in a fire at this hour of the night? And how did you know that guy was in there?
I told you, Lieutenant. George called me. He was up against the protection grip. He tried to hire me. I told him I'd have you look into it.
Well?
It's too late for a referral now.
Yeah? Well, it looks like it's my baby now. You better give me the whole shooting match to date.
I have. That's all I've got. Anything turned up on your end? Any other complaints of a protection shakedown?
Not a mutter. You're lucky you're out of it.
I'm not. I haven't welched on a client yet, and as far as I'm concerned, George was my client.
Well, it's a good, clean, pro job anyway. Tough to prove arson.
Maybe not. I found this wedged under George.
Plastic?
Celluloid scrap. Comes in real handy. Stick a plumber's candle in a pile of it, and by the time it blazes up, the mechanic is clear to Nutley, New Jersey, to establish his alibi.
Celluloid, huh? Well, then I'd better make my call in. Arson.
Yeah, and while you've got the precinct on the wire, just casually mention murder.
The bus from Bellevue rolled up, and they loaded George's body in the back. I watched it pull away. Then a hand fell on my shoulder. I turned around slow and found a pair of thick eyeglasses staring right through me.
Now, Mr. Craig, I'm Alfred Whittington.
Oh, look out for the lapel. This has just become my only suit.
You're the confidential investigator, aren't you?
I've got a license.
I want to hire you.
I pay rent on an office that's open during business hours. If you don't mind, right now I'm tired and a little burnt around the edges.
I overheard your conversation with Lieutenant Edwards.
You'll get your ear pinched in a keyhole that way.
I'd like to talk to you, Craig. Perhaps my apartment?
Perhaps not.
Would it interest you if I told you I want to retain a detective to find out who killed George the Tailor?
Oh? All right, Mr. Whittington, as you say, let's go to your apartment. We rode uptown in the caddy that had to bend to get around corners. The name clicked as we crossed 42nd Street. Alfred P. Whittington. He ran the newspaper that did the big crime series this year. They got Stretch Longo to talk and almost pinned half a dozen rackets on the coattails of Herman Jess, the big operator. Of course, they had to put Longo together with scotch tape for the funeral, but it made nice reading, and Herman Jess had left town until it all blew over. Whittington's apartment was in the penthouse on top of the newspaper building. We sailed up in a private lift and waded through the naps to his library. It was the kind of a room you see behind the iron gray hair and the whiskey ads. Whittington was a little cozy about speaking his piece, so we discussed interior decoration till he got ready to make the plunge.
I had this room specially designed for my hobbies.
Oh, looks like you make a hobby of hobbies. Guns, original oil paintings, and that fish tank is big enough for a stunted whale.
That isn't all. I've got movie editing equipment in those cabinets, color slide projector. I'm very interested in photography.
All you need is an erector set. Look, Mr. Whittington, I'm not writing an article for House Beautiful magazine.
Of course, I just like to get to know a man before I talk business.
With me, it's the other way around, so let's have it.
You know, of course, the paper's been running a series on crime in the city. The board of directors is very anxious to continue. They've so instructed me.
Where do I fit in?
I heard you say you were going to work on this protection racket.
That's right.
Do you still intend to?
Up to the top.
Good, good. We can help each other, Craig. I want to retain you on behalf of the paper.
What happened to your reporters? Measles?
Contrary to popular fiction, reporters aren't trained as detectives. You are.
What do you want?
Whatever you can get. Of course, I want reports direct to me, strictly confidential.
That comes with the price of the entree.
Our legal staff will have to go over everything before we print it. And nobody's to know you're working for me.
Bashful?
Discreet. The staff here would feel I didn't have confidence in them.
Don't you?
When I want a job done right, I go to a professional. I want the truth, no matter whom it involves. But I want the story exclusive, as it develops, step by step.
All right. Then you're my second client, because George the Tailor comes first. Next morning, I went down to the insurance company that pays me that nice, steady retainer, rain or shine. I waded through the acre of desks in the outer office and rapped on the glass door marked Arthur B. Goldsmith. Art was the company expert on fires. He knew enough angles on arson to burn out an asbestos mine. I planted the scrap of celluloid I found under George the Tailor on his desk and flipped over a few questions.
No soap, Barry. Celluloid is standard equipment.
It doesn't point to anybody?
It'd be like asking which ball player uses a bat. The mechanic plants a plumber's candle in the celluloid scrap, down she burns, and then they can file the insurance claim in the morning.
Much doing these days?
Average. Not like in the Depression. In 33, the only way to make a profit was burn your own place down every 6 months.
Art, if you wanted to hire the best, money no object, who would you get to start a nice, cozy conflagration?
Pro job?
Major league.
Let's see. Mike DiGiorno's in Elmira. Maybe Irving Turkle, Celluloid Harry Bush. I'll give you a list, maybe 10 men.
Thanks, Art.
It's a long shot. Got something else?
Not yet, but if you rake a red-headed clinker out of the next fire, that's me. I started checking down Art's list. It was like looking for the clams in a bowl of cheap chowder. Two of them were at peace in the lower bay, hugging a load of bricks. I found Irving Turkle on Center Street, right opposite police headquarters, pushing a baby carriage full of hot charcoal and roasted chestnuts.
Hot roasted chestnuts. All hot.
Dime's worth, Turkle.
Who are you?
Barry Craig. Art Goldsmith at Federal Indemnity and put me on you.
Oh, yeah. Why, I got a lot of respect for Mr. Goldsmith. A lot of respect.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your chestnut.
Thanks.
Look out for worms.
Yeah, I will. How's business, Turkle?
You push ice cream, turns cold. Switch to chestnut, you fry an egg in the sidewalk.
Tough, huh?
My worst enemy should have it better.
You haven't been roasting anything besides chestnuts lately?
Like what?
Like tailor shops?
Mr. Craig, I'm telling you honest, I ain't so much as set fire to a cigarette since the last time I got sprung.
Sure.
Look, I ain't so young no more. You could get pneumonia standing out here, but inside those cell blocks, it ain't so nice neither. I ought to know. I've been in maybe 18 years since I was 13. Warwick, Myra, Clinton, I've been to them all. Enough already. I made up my mind I want to die on the outside.
Could you use 5, Turkle?
Yeah. Kidding.
I want to find a mechanic who did a job on the west side yesterday.
A tailor shop?
You know about it?
I read it in the paper.
I got a list from Art Goldsmith. Save me some time and it's worth a thin.
Me, Mr. Goldsmith. I shouldn't ought to put me on the list. I retired. I wouldn't.
How about the rest of them?
Well, I heard somebody the other day saying Harry Bush made a good connection.
Where can I find him?
Look, Mr. Craig, I'm on my own now. There wouldn't nobody even feel bad if I got took.
I'll cover you, Turkle.
All right. Harry Bush has got a drop in Long Island City. Easy glide roller skating rink.
All right, Turkle. Thanks a lot.
You tell Mr. Goldsmith I'm retired. You tell him that. I got a lot of respect for Mr. Goldsmith. Excuse me, I got to get back to work. Chestnuts. Hot roasted chestnuts.
Glide roller skating rink was in a factory district across the river in Queens. It was an oversized barn with high school kids on wheels where the cows should be. I managed to collide with a redhead in a turtleneck sweater and one of those velvet skating skirts that looked like the paper panties on a lamb chop, and she told me where to look for Harry Bush. There was a sign on the door that said, "Manager, keep out," but I decided to overlook it.
Who's that?
Hello, Harry.
You want to rent skates, you're in the wrong pew.
Mind if I smoke?
Who are you?
We got a light, a match, maybe a plumber's candle.
What are you, a cop?
Private license, Barry Craig. It's a nice drop you've got here, Harry.
What are you talking about? I'm the manager of this.
Been to any good fires lately?
What would I be doing at a fire?
Lighting it. They say around town, Celluloid Harry Bush is working again. You're in the protection racket up to your pointy ears.
You're crazy, Craig. I haven't been near a tailor shop.
Yeah? I didn't mention any names, Harry. I just said protection. How did you happen to think of tailor shops?
I read about it in this morning's paper.
They're still burning people for murder in this state, Harry. But then you won't mind. You like fires.
I wouldn't even get booked. Listen, Craig, I don't care what you think. It ain't gonna do you no good.
Somebody covering for you, Harry?
What do you think?
Who is it?
Why don't you find out?
Maybe I will. So long, Firefly. Outside, I parked my shoulders against the wall just around the corner and went into a trance. I didn't have long to wait. Celluloid Harry came bouncing out in less than 5 minutes and headed for town. I stuck with him like bubblegum till he ducked into a doorway in the East 60s. I gave him a running start, and I waltzed in time to see the indicator on the elevator hit 5. I ran a finger down the directory. There were only 2 officers. Dr. Martin Fredulik, DDS, and an outfit named Star Enterprises that could stand for anything. I grabbed the elevator on the next bounce and punched the button marked 5. I put my shoulder to the door marked Star Enterprises and heaved.
What? What's the idea?
Well, Herman Jess, I presume.
I didn't know you were back.
Who the devil are you?
Where's Thunderbird Harry?
Who?
The little spark plug. He came up here.
I have enough trouble without guessing games. Who are you?
Barry Craig.
You're not police.
Private.
Now, you can't break in here like this. I'm not a well man. I should be in Florida right now.
What's keeping you?
Well, that's my business.
Yeah, I know about your business. You're really a public benefactor, Herman. Where would a kid get a reefer without you, huh?
Yes. Now look, the doctor said I shouldn't get excited now.
That must be a handicap in running your racket.
I'm not in rackets anymore. I'm retired.
What makes you think I'm going to believe that?
Now, does it look like I'm running a business here?
Well, no, but...
I've got no desk, no files, not even a telephone. Now, the doctor says I've got to have absolute quiet.
All right, then. Just tell me where Celluloid Harry is, and I'll stop disturbing the peace.
Now, look, Craig, you want somebody named Harry. I haven't got him. There's only one door here, and you came through it. Now, take a quick look in the closet and walk out of here. My heart can take just so much. And...
I'll take you up on that, Jeff. Not even a bone.
Now, kindly leave.
Okay, Jeff. But if you haven't quit the rackets, I'm warning you now. I'm after the mechanic that burned George the tailor and the man who bought him. Clear up to the top. Put that in your blood pressure and smoke it. I started for the door with a sinking feeling that I was a sucker in a new style shell game. Celluloid Harry had to be in Jess's office. Unless he was under the rug, I couldn't see him. The elevator door was just sliding closed as I reached it. I got a quick shot of a pretty picture. Celluloid Harry with his finger on the first floor button. The door slammed and I stared at the arrow as it swung around. It didn't add up. It wasn't in Jess's office. The only other room on the floor was a dentist. I decided to develop a toothache.
Can I help you?
It's the tooth. This one, see? Hmm? Hurts something awful.
Oh. Dr. Weiss is on the first floor, and Dr. Carey on the third.
What's the matter with Dr. Padulik?
I'm sorry. He isn't in today.
How about the fellow just came out?
There's nobody here.
Then I guess I made a mistake. By the way, you like roller skating?
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. A book of matches on your desk says Easy Glide Roller Rink. I thought maybe you liked to skate. That dentist setup smelled like a herring factory at high noon in July, but I didn't push the point. I left and found a phone booth in the lobby of the building and poured my story into Whittington's shell-like ears.
There might be any number of reasons for that girl lying to you, Craig. Harry might be a boyfriend.
She doesn't like to skate. And Herman Jess is right next door. I think the dentist's office is a blind.
You think he's fronting for Jess?
I'd lay the odds. When the crowd thins out, I'm going up there to check.
Well, what do you expect to find?
I figure with the rackets Jess is running, he's got to have complete records handy or he couldn't keep track of the take. I want to find those records.
All right. If you come across anything, bring it straight to me.
The receptionist had left for lunch, so I rang a few peals on the bell to see if Dr. Padulik was at home. He wasn't, so I let myself in with a bobby pin and went to work on the desk in the inner room. I pulled out a stack of records. That latest date was 3 months ago. The appointment book past that date was blank. The bills checked. Nothing later than 3 months ago, except the last one. A bill from the Carnmont Memorial Home for $700.84 for the funeral of Martin Padulik.
What are you doing in here?
Huh? Who are you?
Who do you think I am? Dr. Martin Padulik.
He was a rabbity gray little man, looked pretty good for a 3 month corpse. There was a vein in his forehead, jumping like a kid on a pogo stick. But his hand was steady as a rock, as it was wrapped around a .38 revolver.
You stay where you are.
What do you think you're going to do?
You broke into my office. I'm going to call the police.
Fine. You go ahead. Maybe you can explain to them how you happened to be buried 3 months ago.
What?
You're no dentist. You're fronting for Herman Jess.
Well, then, you're crazy.
Am I? I'll save you time. I'll call the police.
Give me that gun.
And you give me that gun. Fair trade. Now, settle down, friend, while I jam a chair under the doorknob. I'm going to look for Herman Jess's record. I was in a tough spot, and I knew it. The license commission doesn't look kindly on breaking and entering, and if that office was clean, I was into trouble. I knew I couldn't search that room for anything smaller than an elephant in the few minutes before somebody drifted in, so I kept one eye on my buddy and played it cozy. I yanked the desk drawers out and threw the papers around like a picnic. I pulled the medical books down off the shelves to make sure that there weren't any false fronts. I wasn't getting any cake from the phony dentist, so I headed for the other room. I dumped the instrument trays, and he couldn't have cared less. But when I headed for the file cabinet in the corner, the vein in his forehead beat like a ragtime drummer on bathtub gin.
You can't get away with this. I'll have you in jail.
Yeah, yeah. I slid open the file drawer. Nothing but dental records. I slammed it shut, and my playmate relaxed like a hangover in a Turkish bath. I couldn't figure it. Those records ought to be near that file cabinet. Maybe a secret panel. I couldn't be sure without an X-ray, and then I got it.
What are you doing?
Taking a look in this box on top of the file.
Those are valuable X-rays. Don't get them out of order.
I won't. I'm taking them with me. This first batch are teeth, all right. But from here on, these pictures didn't come from anybody's mouth. Not unless his molars kept double-entry books. Oh, company.
Let me in. I know you're in there, Craig.
Not for long. Which way is the nearest fire escape?
Hurry! I got him!
In the pigsty, friend!
Craig, stand still or I shoot.
The window was locked, so I tossed a wastepaper basket through it. I was 2 floors down the fire escape when Jess showed up in the window. I was slamming around like a pinball game with body English. I hit the ground and sprinted for the curb. Then I jumped into a waiting hack. Just pulled away, I saw Celluloid Harry bounce out of the building and into another cab.
Hey, mister, I wouldn't want to make you nervous, but you're being followed.
No, I'm very popular. Can you lose him?
No, my life insurance lapsed last week.
Would $50 change your mind?
What good is insurance after I'm dead? 50 I can spend now. Hold on to your plate.
We weaseled through Manhattan. The cab behind us stuck like a mustard blaster. We got into a jam in a transverse across Central Park.
Hang on, mister. I'm going to cut inside that bus on the sidewalk. You got caught by the light.
Shot straight up to Whittington's Mint Line sewer. He was showing himself color shots with his cocker spaniel on the slide projector when I waltzed in.
Craig, you didn't bring?
Doorbells are for process service. I've got Herman Jess and the protection racket in my pocket. Here.
What are these?
Dental X-ray films. Only there isn't an inlay in the bunch. These are Jess's records, microfilmed to match the teeth X-rays.
Are you sure?
You can't read them without a magnifying widget. But I'll bet there's enough in that envelope to send Jess up the river like salmon. Shall I call the cops?
I'll take care of that, Craig.
Wait. You expecting anybody up here tonight?
No, I left orders not to be disturbed.
In that case, we'd better get ready to receive company. Somebody's coming up the stairs. I thought I lost Harry, but I guess he's stuck. Chuck that envelope in the fish tank.
What the?
Go ahead. It won't hurt the film. Now, try to look in it.
All right, Craig. Get him up.
We were just talking about you, Jess. Was your nose itching?
You hoist him too, Whittingham.
You can't get away with this, Jess. I'll have you...
You won't do anything. You're pretty brave in those crusading editorials. Wrecked my health. Let's see you stand up against the gun.
Craig, do something.
Got any suggestions?
I want those records. This sponge brain stole from me.
You got me wrong, Jess.
Shall I work on him?
No. We'll try Whittington.
What are you going to do?
Harry, ask him where those records are.
You get away from me.
You heard, Mr. Jess. Where are the records?
I don't know.
Hey!
Don't move, Craig. Ask him again, Harry.
Come on, Whittington. Where are they?
I don't know. I told you. Let me alone.
Listen, Jess.
Don't move. I'm a very nervous man. It would be very bad for me to shoot you. Now you got anything to say?
No, not when you put it that way.
Okay, Harry. Go ahead.
All right, Whittington.
No. Don't hit me again. No, don't.
Where are those records?
No, not again. There, in the fish tank. Craig hid them there.
Harry. I got them. Look inside.
It's films, all right.
All right, we're getting out of here. Come on, Harry.
What's that?
Mr. Whittington is having open house.
What are you talking about, Craig?
I think the boys in blue are coming to tea.
A cop, he's bluffing.
Care to wait and see?
The back door, Harry. We don't want trouble on the way out. Take care of Craig.
A pleasure!
Harry was behind me when he let me have it with the butt end of his gun. I retired temporarily from this world, and when I got back, I was looking at a pair of shoulders 4 yards wide with Lieutenant Buck Edwards cooing gently in my ear.
Craig, you all right?
Oh.
I'd better send for a doctor.
How about Jess?
Dad is yesterday's racing form. He tried to shoot it out with the boys I had staked downstairs. And Celluloid Harry's on his way to prison ward at Bellevue.
Just dead, eh? Lieutenant, did you search the body? There was certain evidence.
You mean this envelope?
That belongs to the paper, Lieutenant.
part of a confidential report.
I don't know, Mr. Whittington.
I'll take complete responsibility. We rate a break on this story. Craig was retained by us.
Go ahead, Buck. Give it to him.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll put it in my safe.
Better look at it first.
What do you mean?
You'll find it's a real classy collection of diseased choppers.
What are you talking about?
They aren't the real microfilm records. They're just a bunch of legitimate x-rays of teeth. I left the real records with the cab driver and told him to take them to Lieutenant Edwards.
What you told me?
Sure I did. But I like to play it safe. I knew Jess would be after me, and I was afraid he might persuade you to give them back.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I was rather weak. But I really thought he intended to kill it.
Oh, don't apologize. You were terrific. That was a great strong-arm scene you played with your stooges.
Stooges?
Sure. Why do you think I ducked those records, Whittington? When I was going through that x-ray file, one thing caught my eye. A color transparency. It didn't exactly belong in that file because I'd seen a print of that picture before on your desk. A very flattering portrait of your wife.
My wife?
Yes, you made a slight mistake. You must have got it mixed up with your microfilm records when you shipped them back to your boy, Herman Jess.
Oh, see here. Are you trying to insinuate that
I mean you're the real boss behind this record, not Harry Jess.
Why, well, that's absurd. If that were true, then why would I have hired you?
Self-protection. Your board of directors was pushing you to deliver that crime series, but you figured that if I turned anything up, it'd be easy to take care of me this way.
Craig, you're out of your mind. You can't prove a thing.
Oh, yes, we can. We checked those microfilms, Mr. Whittington. There's a payoff to you listed on every page. You've been under arrest for the last 5 minutes.
Well, Whittington, I guess this squares accounts for George the tailor, but you still owe me for one brown suit. I'll put it on the bill for services rendered.
Oh,
take him away, boys. Coming, Barry.
Coming, Lieutenant. So long, folks. See you next week.
You have just heard Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, starring William Gargan. Next week, another exciting transcribed story starring America's number one detective, William Gargan, as Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. Tonight's story was written by Ernest Canoy and featured Santos Ortega in the role of Alfred Whittington. Your announcer is Don Pardo. All persons and places mentioned in this program were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Till we meet again next Wednesday for another hard-hitting adventure with Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, let me give you a brief rundown of the adventure shows you can hear on NBC. Tomorrow night on NBC, there are a trio of action programs starting off with Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, as he investigates another thrilling mystery. Then Dragnet brings you an authentic criminal case history as taken from the files of the Los Angeles Police. Later, Counterspy is called in to solve a case which threatens to endanger our national security. Then on Saturday, screen actor Brian Dunleavy takes you down the shadow-filled corridors of mystery on another dangerous assignment. On Sunday, NBC's adventure shows include a spine-tingling visit with Martin Kane, Private Eye, followed by the exciting story of The Whisperer. Later, Douglas Fairbanks is featured in The Silent Men with authentic action stories about your government security agents. On Monday, Herbert Marshall comes to the NBC microphone to assume the mysterious identity of the man called X. Then Tuesday night, hear Big Town, and another pulse-quickening story is told by editor Steve Wilson of the Illustrated Press. Well, there you have a complete roundup of the top mystery shows you can hear on NBC. Next Wednesday night, we hope you'll be back with us for another adventure with William Gargan as Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. Now it's Meredith Wilson's Music Room on NBC.
Due to the illness of Wally Mayer, the part of Mike Shane will be played tonight by Edmund MacDonald in The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. It's a bright and sunny San Francisco afternoon, the sort of day you want to close up your office, say to heck with work, and go over the hill. Right now, Mike Shane and Phyllis Knight have closed their office and gone over the bay. But they can't say to heck with work. In fact, work is calling them to the Oakland Railroad Terminal. As they enter the depot, Phyllis looks at her wristwatch.
3:20. Mike, do you realize that train is 5 whole hours late?
I ought to. This makes our 3rd trip across the bay to meet it. Watch out for these swinging doors.
Yeah.
From Chicago, Des Moines, Denver, Salt Lake City on track 2.
Oh, it's in, all right. Here comes the Red Cast with the bags.
Hey, I'd still like to know why we had to come clear over here to the train to welcome Mr. Frank Hewitt Newton back to his own town.
I wouldn't know what in a minute, Angel. 15-word telegram can't say much more than meet me at the depot, Pioneer Limited.
Plus that little business about a package he's sending you Air Express.
Something's wrong, and I guess he wants fast action on it.
Yeah.
Hey, there he is.
Where?
Right ahead of us. Those 2 men and that red-headed gal.
Yeah.
Oh, glad to see you, Mr. Newton. Mr. Newton. Hey,
Mr. Newton.
It's me, Mike Shane. Just looked right through us.
Well, maybe he didn't hear us.
Come on, we'll catch him at the taxi stand.
Okay. Excuse me. 40,000 people in our way.
Excuse me, sir. This way, Phil. Hurry, come on.
Yeah. They're outside already, Mike.
There he is. Getting into that sedan with the others.
Well, run for it, Mike. Run!
Oh, Mr. Newton! Mr. Newton! Mr. Newton!
Oh, save your lungs. Save your lungs, Mike. He's gone.
Oh, for the love of...
You know, he's got a real cute sense of humor, hasn't he? 3 trips across the bay to glad hand a guy and he gives you the glassy stare.
Yeah. Maybe it ain't from humor. Let's head back to the office. I want to do some phoning. Hello. This is Mike Shane calling. Mr. Newton in? No, he got back a half an hour ago. He wired me to meet him at the Oakland Depot, but something went wrong. Oh, you're Mrs. Newton? Yeah, that's right. Mike Shane, the detective. I don't know. I got his telegram from Reno telling me to meet him at the train. Yeah, it was sent from Reno. Well, if I knew, I'd tell you, Mrs. Newton. You haven't phoned me. Oh, thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Oh, so friend husband didn't tell the missus he was arriving home today.
Guess not. She thought he was still in Chicago. Awfully curious why he was hiring Mike Shane, the detective.
That makes 3 of us. Where's that telegram? I want to read it again.
Oh, here, on the desk.
Thanks. Reno, 11:10 p.m., sending package Air Express, hold for me, stop. Meet me Oakland Depot tomorrow, Pioneer Limited, Frank Hewitt Newton. Oh, he must have gotten off the train to send the mysterious package. But why?
To make little girls ask big questions.
Smarty.
So far, the score's 00. No package, no client. I'll get it. Mike Shane speaking. Mr. Newton. Say, what went wrong? We went over to the depot. We saw you, hollered at you, chased after you. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, well, all right, but it seemed funny. Well, no, it hasn't. Where? Fairfax Hotel. Well, sure, if it comes before we close the office. Room 911. Yeah, okay. But would you not mind telling me what it's all about? Hello? Hello, Mr. Newton. Hello? Hello? Oh, he hung up on me.
Well, did he tell you why he gave us the fast run around?
He says he'll explain later. Wants me to bring the express package to him at the Fairfax Hotel when it comes.
Well, it sounds to me like he's dodging the sheriff or bill collectors.
It sounds pretty worried to me. He's dodging something or... But what?
Or who?
You're Mr. Shane?
That's right. Something we can do for you?
I'm Mrs. Frank Newton.
Oh. We talked on the phone.
Won't you have a chair, Mrs. Newton?
I've come here, Mr. Shane, to find out exactly why my husband hired you.
I'm afraid you know as much about it as I do, Mrs. Newton.
In other words, you won't tell. It's about me.
Mr. Shane isn't in the habit of lying, Mrs. Newton. We do not know.
We think it has something to do with a package which your husband sent to us.
A package?
Yes, an air express from Reno.
He phoned a few minutes ago from the Fairfax Hotel. I'm to deliver it to him there. That's all I know.
Fairfax Hotel? Well, I'll see about that right now.
Well, that lady better watch her blood pressure.
This is a divorce case. I'm getting out of it. Yet somehow it doesn't smell like one.
Hey. Hey, Mike. Now, where are you going?
Fairfax Hotel. I'm going to find out what this hoopla is all about. I'll see you later.
Oh, fine. Fine. Now, all I got to do is sit here and just go crazy. I write letters, which is worse.
Hi there, Phyllis. Phyllis.
If you want to see Mike, Inspector, you missed him by 15 seconds.
You must have gone down the other hall. You mind if I sit down?
Just make yourself comfortable.
Thanks.
You're just in time to see me go nuts.
Huh?
Batty. Telegrams, trains late, phone calls, people tearing in and out. Oh, there, you see? See what I tell you? See?
Air Express for Mr. Michael Shane.
Air... This is it. It's come. Let me see it.
Take it easy, lady. I just want you to sign.
Yeah, sure, sure. The receipt. I'll sign it. Here. Here. Like that?
Thanks. You're welcome, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Phil, what's gotten into you? Where's the package? What's the package? What is it all about?
It's no bigger than a small book. It doesn't even weigh as much. But this is the dear little darling that's got a skaga.
Will you let me have that again?
Faraday, we got a telegram. Sending you package Air Express. Hold for me. He walked right past us at the train. Wants it delivered to the hotel. Wife says it's hers. And Faraday, have you got an aspirin? Oh.
Relax me, gal. I'll get it. Mike Shane's office. Huh? Oh, no. Where? Market and Geary. Right away.
Faraday, what's the matter? What's wrong?
Phil.
What? What is it?
Mike's been hurt. Bad.
In just a moment, we'll rejoin Mike Shane and his assistant Phyllis in their adventures. Regular lubrication for your car is, of course, most important, but proper lubrication is even more so. If your car is carelessly or hurriedly greased, important fittings may be missed or left dry. That is why Union Oil Stop Wear Lubrication means extra insurance against mechanical wear and depreciation. Stop Wear Lubrication jobs are a matter of pride with the Union Oil Minutemen. Only the finest high-quality greases are used. Each fitting is carefully and thoroughly lubricated according to the manufacturer's specifications. While your car is on the hoist, the Minutemen inspect out-of-sight points and check them for danger signs. Stop Wear Lubrication is so accurate and scientific that you receive a written guarantee with each job, which is definite proof of reliable service. Your car will roll smoother, handle easier, stand up better with Stop Wear Lubrication. So, ladies and gentlemen, for guaranteed, reliable lubrication, ask your Union Oil Minuteman for Stop Wear. Stop Wear is an exclusive process available only at Union Oil Minuteman stations. Phyllis and Inspector Faraday have reached the intersection of Market and Geary Streets, where Mike was reported badly hurt.
I'm scared. I'm scared, Faraday. I'm just scared sick. If Mike is hurt so bad
that he... I know what you mean, but where is he? There's no crowd, no ambulance.
Well, maybe they've taken him to the hospital.
Perhaps. Let's ask that traffic officer over there.
He's just got to be all right. He's the best boss, the best guy who ever lived.
Officer. Officer.
Yes, sir?
Did the ambulance take the man who was injured here a few minutes ago?
What man?
Mike Shane, my boss, the best guy who... He was run over.
Not on my corner. Ain't been even a dented fender around here all day.
But they said Market and Geary. They said he... They said... Oh.
Yeah. A phony call. Somebody wanted you out of your office.
Oh, I have been a dope. They wanted that package. We've got to get back, Faraday.
Too late now.
I've lost it.
Mike was to deliver it to the Fairfax Hotel. What'll he do to me?
I'm curious. Let's pick him up at the hotel and find out.
Bill, Faraday, what are you two doing here?
Looking for Mike Shane, Lothario of the hotel lobby.
Oh, golly, Mike, it's good to see you alive and whole.
Huh?
Mike, the Air Express came, and then we got a phone call saying you were hurt and to come quick, and we ran out, and I forgot the package. It's stolen.
Holy, you're the oldest trick in the book. Now what'll I tell Newton?
Nothing, just hand him the package. Here it is.
Faraday, in your pocket?
Yeah, sure. I grabbed it when we tore out.
You knew it was a fake call, and you let me go on worrying.
I'd like to know who made that call.
It was a woman's voice.
Mrs. Newton. She tried to get the package before.
Maybe. I talked to Mr. Tootin on the lobby phone here. He said he'd be down in a minute.
Did he tell you what this hide-and-seek is all about?
No. I think he was holding a conference in his room. One of the men we saw him with him at the depot got out of the elevator.
Then you're waiting for Newton now?
Yeah, if he ever goes down.
Well, let's go up to his room and talk to him.
Yeah, I'd like to know what's on the fire myself.
I suppose that... Okay, it's room 911.
Well, come on, Mike. The elevators are this way.
Yes, and so is Mrs. Newton. She just stepped out of one.
Yeah. Uh-oh, let's not tangle with her again.
Amen. Yeah, she's going through that arcade. All right, kids, let's make an end run for it.
Here it is, Mike. Number 911.
The key is on the outside of the door.
I will be so glad when we get rid of this package. It's hexed.
No answer. Suppose we might stick our heads inside?
Go ahead. I've got the authority.
Mr. Newton. Mr. Newton, it's Mike Shane.
He must have gone downstairs.
Hey, what's that noise?
Come on, let's find out. I don't see anybody. Uh-oh. On the sofa.
Mike, is he?
Useless question, don't you think? Pillow over his face. Oh, it used to be a pillow. It's blown inside out.
Stuck the gun into the pillow and used it as a silencer. Is that your man, Newton?
Must be. Yeah. Yeah, I can still recognize him.
Yeah, but this man's dead and we heard sounds.
Here he is.
Where? Tied up with bed sheets and gags.
Slugged a couple of times, too. Here, give me a hand, Mike.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, I know him. This is one of the guys who came out of the depot with Newton.
Yeah, he's not tied very tight. Let's get that gag out of his mouth.
Oh, thank heavens. I was choking.
Can you stand up?
I think so. Oof. Dizzy. Hit me so hard.
Who are you?
Carl Stanton. Frank's business partner.
You were, Mr. Stanton.
You mean... Then he did it?
Very thoroughly. You know who did it?
There were two of them. A man and a woman. She called him George.
That's it, Mike. The other two who were with Newton at the depot.
Yes. Frank wired me to meet him there. They were with him. Had guns and said they'd kill us if we called for help.
That explains why Newton gave us the brush off at the station.
We didn't dare make a sign. They forced Frank to come to the hotel and get this room. They made him phone a detective. I guess it was you, sir. Bring the necklace here.
You mean there's jewelry inside his package?
A diamond necklace. Cost Frank $42,000.
Ooh.
And he sent it to me because he knew these two were after it.
Oh, confound it. They've cut the phone wires. I have to go downstairs to call headquarters.
Just a minute, Faraday. Let's get a description of the two so you can broadcast an alarm.
Don't worry, I intend to. Now look, give us the whole story while you're about it, Mr. Stanton.
Well, Frank bought the necklace in Chicago for his wife. These people got on the train there, he said. They became so friendly, got suspicious. He sneaked off the train at Reno and shipped the necklace to Mr. Shane.
Well, somehow they must have figured out the trick.
Well, they found the Air Express receipt in Frank's wallet. So they made him come to the hotel and then phone the detective. The red-headed girl said she was going downstairs to the drugstore, but she didn't come back, and the other one got awfully excited. He said she was double-crossing him.
Well, she made that phony call. She went to our building, watched for the express truck, and then tricked us, huh?
Probably. Go on, Mr. Stanton.
Well, this fella lost his head. Said he'd blow our brains out if we didn't give him money. We were to call a messenger here to the room with all our company cash. I tried to sneak the gun away from him, and, well, that's the last I knew.
Uh-huh. He slugged you, tied you up, then killed Newton. He really went haywire.
I'll get it. I'll answer it.
Is Mrs. Newton in?
Well,
come on in.
Well, I didn't expect to find so many... Good Lord, Frank.
Yeah, murdered. Couple of jewel thieves.
What did you want?
Why, I was to meet Mrs. Newton here.
What for?
I'm her attorney, Warren Wilson. We're going to discuss Edna's divorce and property settlement with him.
Looking out for her interests very carefully, aren't you, Wilson?
Somebody has to. The way you're milking the company.
That's a lie. If anybody was milking it, it was Frank. $42,000 for a string of diamonds.
You mean the company bought the necklace?
It did. Frank phoned me from Chicago for the money. I told him it would take all our cash we had in the bank.
Just a minute. Mr. Wilson, is this the first time you've been to this room?
Certainly.
We found the key on the outside of the door. Why, anybody could unlock it and come in.
Right. What about Mrs. Newton? We saw her come out of the elevator.
Yeah, but Mike, Mr. Stanton didn't mention her. Of course, he was unconscious. Wouldn't know.
Phil, you looked up Newton's house phone. You remember the street number?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get going. I want to swap one diamond necklace for one piece of information.
Send a cop up to the room, will you, Mike? I'm going down to headquarters and broadcast a pickup for the Chicago paper.
Okay, but don't talk the newspapers yet or you'll be sorry.
What do you wish to see me about, Mr. Shane?
The Air Express package just came, Mrs. Newton. We understand it's for you.
May I have it, please?
Certainly. Here you are.
Thank you.
Your eyes are red, Mrs. Newton. Is there something wrong?
Why, no. I'm just upset. I'm getting a divorce.
Warren Wilson is your attorney, I believe.
Oh, I suppose Frank has set you on his trail.
Gentleman seems very interested in protecting your financial interests.
I don't believe that concerns you.
Excuse me. By the way, I saw you in the lobby of the Fairfax Hotel a while ago. Did you talk over the divorce with your husband?
Yes.
How did he take it?
Mr. Shane, if you came here to pry into my private affairs...
I came here, Mrs. Newton, to tell you that your husband is dead.
He's dead? Who did it?
I didn't say he was murdered.
No, of course not. I just assumed from the way you spoke...
As a matter of fact, he was shot to death.
Yes, they're looking for the killers right now. Two jewel thieves followed Mr. Newton from Chicago.
Oh, well, then it was for this... It's my anniversary present.
That's a pretty costly one for a man who was going to leave you.
Well, if I'd only known. We were in Chicago, and I told Frank I wanted some diamonds for our 15th anniversary. He said no. We quarreled, and I came home without him.
This attorney, Warren Wilson, he wanted you to get a divorce, didn't he?
Well, he said it was my only protection, that Frank and Carl Stanton were robbing the company, and Warren was worried about my property.
Which, of course, he would be glad to protect if he married you.
Oh, never. I told him so. I respect him as an attorney, but as a man, a husband, no.
He's probably heard that women change their minds. That would pay off even as executor of your husband's estate.
You mean Warren might have... Oh, no, he couldn't be smart enough to use a pillow.
Mike.
No. I guess he wouldn't, Mrs. Newton. In fact, it's pretty ingenious for a woman.
I didn't do it. I swear I didn't. I opened the door, and Frank was on the couch, and I just turned and ran. And I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to tell anybody. What would the police say?
Oh, that's easy to find out, Mrs. Newton. Put on your hat and coat, and we'll go down to headquarters.
Height 5 feet 3. Weight 105. Red hair.
Powder, Phil. Turn it up, will you?
Repeating. Pickup man and woman. George Highland, alias Slip Doyle. Age 36. Height 5 feet 9. Weight 155. Blonde hair. Woman, Gwen Evans, alias Clara Bloomberg. Age 26, 28. Height 5 feet 3. Weight 105. Red hair. Warning. They are killers. They are killers.
Well, Faraday got a real description of the two.
Stanton must have identified them from police photographs.
Well, then what's the sense of dragging me in? They're the ones. They killed Frank.
Now, did they, Mrs. Newton? I wouldn't be known.
Mike, that coupe behind us.
Yeah?
I saw it park across the street when we rang Mrs. Newton's doorbell.
You sure of it?
I'm positive.
Okay, I'll turn at this corner and see what happens.
Yeah, it's still behind us, Mike. It weren't so dark, I could see who's driving. Wait a minute, the street lamp.
Yeah, I caught it in the rear vision. His pal, Georgie, alias Slip Joy.
Oh, the killer!
He's alone. He's alone in the car.
Oh, he's after my necklace. He's after me.
He's after all three of us. Mike, head for a police station.
Save our necks and lose? We're heading for the office of Shane Detective Agency.
Mike, you're plain crazy.
Maybe. We'll decide that after the trap is set.
Oh, fine, if we're still alive to decide anything.
We'll return to Mike and Phyllis in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, the entire weight of your automobile rides directly on the wheel bearings. Now, wheel bearings are round, must revolve rapidly, and yet support the heavy weight of the car. Because of this concentrated pressure, and because they are also liable to damage from brake dust, grit, and water, the front wheel bearings need the best possible lubrication. Failure to keep these bearings properly lubricated may result in expensive repairs requiring parts now hard to get. Your neighborhood Union Oil Minuteman knows this. That's why he takes such pains to do a thorough job of lubricating the front wheel bearings. First, he washes out all the old grease and dirt with solvents. Then the bearings and races are individually cleaned until they are dry and shiny. Finally, the clean, polished bearings are replaced in the races and greased with special equipment to make certain that every surface is snugly sealed in a thick coating of Union Oil wheel bearing grease. Then your front wheels are all set for months of well-lubricated, easy rolling. The cost for the entire service of your front wheel bearing assembly is nominal. So for safer, easier driving, just stop in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and take advantage of Union Oil's front wheel bearing service. Thank you. Mike thinks he has a plan to capture the murderer who is trailing him. With Phyllis and Mrs. Newton, he is just entering his office.
Turn on the lights, Phil.
Yeah. Mike, this room, it's been ransacked.
Sure. Except Doyle's red-headed girlfriend, that fake phone call you got, remember?
Well, he'll be here any second, Mr. Shane, by the next elevator.
Phil, you get into your office. Do exactly as I told you.
Okay, all right, but this better work good.
And lock your door from the other side.
Oh, Mr. Shane, the man's desperate. He'll kill us, I know.
I don't think so. If he sees I'm unarmed.
So with my husband.
Good evening. Do you always enter with your hat on and a gun on your hand?
I saw three of you get out of the car. Where's the girl?
Bill? She went down the hall. She went down the hall.
Maybe. Or maybe she's in the next room. Locked. You.
Why?
Hand over the necklace.
Well, I haven't got it. Really, I haven't. Mr. Shane,
he's got it. All right, Shane.
Sorry. I'm fresh out of diamonds, too. Wasting your time, pal. No diamonds in that desk. Your red-headed Valentine gave this place the frisk hours ago.
Dirty little double-crosser. You've got the necklace here somewhere. I saw you go into that house with the package and come out again with it.
Grandma, what big eyes you've got.
I'll give you 10 seconds. I'd hate to spoil your nice carpet with a lot of blood.
Oh, don't.
Well, I can have the carpet cleaned. And I'll have to unless you hand me your gun right now.
What are you giving me?
You've got a good pair of eyes, chum, but you don't raise them high enough. Next time you test a locked door, look up at the transom.
Huh? It's open.
And a gun's sticking right through it.
And it's aimed right at your heart, mister.
Thank you.
bad news for you, kids. I just talked with ballistics.
What do they say?
Slip Doyle's gun hasn't been fired for some time.
What did I tell you? I didn't do it.
Well, maybe he used the girl's gun.
We'll have to wait on that. They just picked her up over in Oakland.
He might have used another gun. We know he threatened to kill Newton.
Well, I was just bluffing. He and that other guy knew it. He said I'd be scared of the noise. I told him there wouldn't be any. I'd stuff a pillow in his face and shove the gun into it, but I didn't kill him.
No, you just got bored with the whole thing. You walked out leaving two guys to turn in the alarm.
Oh, I locked them in.
That's the catch. The key was on the outside of the door. Anybody could walk in and do the job.
Okay, then I'd pick Newton's wife.
She's in the next room with Stanton and that attorney, isn't she?
Yeah, let's have a talk with him. And you're coming too, Slip.
Well, all cleared up. Can we go now?
Not yet. We're not dead sure this is the killer.
What? But you all said he was.
You might have that honor, Mrs. Newton. You tried to cover up the fact that you were in that hotel room.
But I explained that.
Maybe. But you sure had blood in your eye when you left our office this afternoon.
Preposterous. It's this jewel thief, undoubtedly.
Well, perhaps an attorney who tried to get Mrs. Newton away from her husband.
I was protecting her from Frank and Carl. They were stripping the business.
How very noble of you, Mr. Wilson. However, I agree, it must have been this thief.
Oh, you're all trying to frame
me. Now, wait a minute. Nobody's trying to frame you. You said you threatened to kill Newton. Now he's dead. You said you were going to fire your gun through that pillar. That's how we found it, the exact way.
Say that again, Faraday.
Huh?
Never mind. Have we been slow? Remember when you and Phil found me in the lobby? I said I saw the Chicago guy going out of the lobby?
Yeah, sure.
That was before I talked to Frank Newton on the desk phone.
Well, then Newton was still alive when Slip Doyle left the hotel.
I told you so.
Slip Doyle made the threats. He told exactly how he'd kill Newton, but he didn't follow through. There was one other person, the only other one in the room, to hear the threat and to carry it out in detail.
Carl Stanton.
Right. Like a cinch. The jewel thief was a perfect fall guy.
No, no, you're wrong.
I told you Carl was stealing from the company. With Newton out of the way, he could lay all the blame on his partner.
Right. So the two crooks had a falling out.
That's why Stanton was tied up so sloppy. He did it himself. Okay, I'll send a man to the hotel to find his gun. That'll cinch it.
It's cinched right now. We've got the motive, we've got Doyle's testimony, we've got our own.
You'll never convict me. I'll kill myself.
First. I don't think you will, Mr. Stanton. They tell me the suicide rate in the county jail is very low.
You don't have to see me to my door, Mike. I'm not afraid of the dark anymore.
Please, Angel, allow me one little touch of Irish gallantry.
Oh, all right. Here we are. If I can just find my keys.
Phil.
Hmm?
Faraday told me how busted up you were when you thought I was injured. The best boss, the best guy who ever lived.
Oh, well, Faraday is an old gossip. You know better than to believe his stories. Oh, jeepers, these keys are here somewhere.
If I had been injured, dear, what would you have done?
Oh, I'd come down to the hospital and kiss you, make you well.
You were, huh? Kiss me, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, here are my keys. Well, good night, Mike.
Oh!
What? What's the matter? What's wrong?
Oh, I'm hurt. I just bit my lip.
Tune in again next week at 8:30 for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as Inspector Faraday. Ed McDonald substituted for Wally Mayer, whose appearance was prevented by illness. Tonight's story was written by Richard DeGraff and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week, but there is more at RelicRadio.com. More from Case Closed, Barry Craig, Michael Shane, thousands of other old-time radio episodes, all brought to you for free thanks to your support. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, give that donate button a click or visit donate.relicradio.com. It's how we keep coming to you every week. Can't do it without you. Thanks for helping out. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.